I got them from all over the country. You know? So that's very, very good. And it goes to show that, and again, unlike other technology, you can reach people worldwide. We've got
This is the Quality News Network. It was one of the worst single attacks against U.S. forces in the war. Suicide car bombers in Diyala province north of Baghdad yesterday killed 9 U.S. paratroopers from the 82nd Airborne. 20 other soldiers and 1 Iraqi were wounded. Al-Qaeda has claimed responsibility. In an earlier unrelated incident, a U.S. soldier was killed by a roadside bomb also north of Baghdad. Also today, mortar attacks and car bombs throughout Iraq have killed 8 Iraqis and wounded 14. On Capitol Hill, a House committee holds a hearing today to investigate the death by friendly fire of Marine Pat Tillman. The committee will also probe the 2003 rescue of Private Jessica Lynch. Lynch's videotaped rescue by special forces was criticized as having been embroidered for the public. In Washington, the fight between Congress and President Bush over Iraq war funding is coming to a head. Democrats tomorrow will begin voting on its $100 billion war appropriation bill, which includes a timetable for troop withdrawal. The president has vowed to veto it. Hamas today began firing rockets into Israel from the Gaza Strip in retribution for the 9 Palestinians killed over the weekend. The rocket fire breaks a 5-month ceasefire. Yesterday, the top Palestinian security chief quit, saying he was not able to bring law and order to the territories as he had promised. In Somalia, Ethiopian tanks are hammering portions of Mogadishu today. There are also reports of shelling and gun battles near the presidential palace. Georgia's fire is still raging out of control. 58,000 acres and 2 dozen homes have been destroyed. 6,000 residents have been evacuated. Firefighters believe the blaze was started by a downed power line. In Seward, Illinois, an ammonia leak in an agricultural processing plant sent 10 people to the hospital last night. The town has been evacuated. 2 other small towns near Seward were also evacuated last night, but those residents have been given permission to return today. Pulitzer Prize-winning author and journalist David Halberstam was killed in a car crash south of San Francisco yesterday morning. He was 73. Former Russian President Boris Yeltsin is lying in state in the Kremlin today before his state funeral tomorrow.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 AM in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
The House Commerce Committee begins hearings today to address food safety. That following a rash of tainted peanut butter, spinach contaminated with E. coli, and the recall of hundreds of brands of dog and cat food. In the past quarter, Toyota beat General Motors to become the world's leading automaker. The Japanese company sold 2.348 million vehicles worldwide. The former CEO of the HealthSouth Corporation has agreed to settle an accounting fraud lawsuit with the federal government for $81 million. However, attorneys for Richard Scrushy say the government will be lucky to get as much as $10 million. Scrushy is running out of money. A sluggish housing market means fewer sales of household appliances, and that translates into a modest decline in quarterly profits for Whirlpool. Quarterly net income was pegged at $117 million. The FDA announced it has approved 13 generic versions of the popular sleep aid Ambien. Ambien is produced by French company Sanofi Aventis. British Petroleum said today its quarterly profit dropped 17% to $4.66 billion. The oil giant says it is producing less oil and paying more to get the crude out of the ground. Light sweet crude is trading at $65.76 a barrel. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
Live from Chicago, the city with many names, it's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. 2 hours of truth and fury representing the fighting spirit of the American worker. And now, through the miracle of screaming audio, here's the guy your bosses hate, the Windy City's biggest windbag, your host, Joe Vecchio.
All right, everybody, wake up. It's time to wake up. It's the Cup of Joe Show. Wake up, get up, do your jumping jacks, Oh, and those of you doing yoga, it's time to do the cobra, but whatever. Welcome aboard to the Cup of Joe Show, and this is not Joe. You have the headbanging hippie here, John Fox, filling in for Joe Vecchio, who is being a working man doing the day shift this week, so he's handed things over to me for the week. So the plan is that I will cover Joe's slot for the rest of the week and, of course, do Foxed Up as we usually do. I'm going to get away from the green stuff for this hour. We're going to do some other things, which I don't do a whole lot of. It's going to feel a little bit like Fourth Estate Radio again. Just missing a really important part for it to be like that, but I'll avoid that subject. Anyway, folks, welcome aboard. I do believe in, with everything with Joe having to do this thing and whatnot, I do believe we have an interview later on in the program with a gentleman by the name of Sam Ataro, who's involved with this Great American Truck Out. Now, I have been reading up on this and I'm not real sure of my opinion about this thing that's going on, but we'll have a chat with this gentleman and we'll see what goes down. So if all goes according to plan, we will be speaking with him at the bottom of the hour. But in the meantime, first of all, how cool is Sheryl Crow? I mean, not only is she a fantastic musician, a wonderful guitar player, but she's got a set of cojones on her that just really, really just, I think, is something else. And I reckon you all have heard about this with Sheryl Crow taking on Karl Rove. And I love the headline from the Huffington Post. Lori David and Sheryl Crow. Karl Rove gets thrown under the Stop Global Warming bus. But I know I said I wasn't going to do green stuff, but this is Karl Rove. And for a guy that plays such dirty trickster politics, who will stoop to no level low enough for this is a guy that will go on character assassinations, lie about people, manipulate the process, and be probably the worst political hack and political terrorist. I'm sorry, that's political terrorist. I love this. He's been offended by an Appalachian musician. I love this. The thing here, Mr. Rove turned his head towards his table, and as soon as he did so, Sheryl reached out to touch his arm. Carl swung around and spat, "Don't touch me! Don't touch me! Only Georgie's allowed to touch me. You know, say, how hard and removed from reality must a person be to refuse to be touched by Sheryl Crow? Unfazed, Sheryl abruptly responded, you can't speak to us like that. You work for us. Carl then quipped, I don't work for you. I work for the American people, to which Sheryl promptly reminded him, we are the American people. You know, so, I mean, this is a slight insight into the way that Karl Rove and these people think? You know? That you and I, who do not agree with his sick and twisted politics, are not actually the American people. That's what I read into that. And, you know, there was the other line, you know, someone asked about, his stoush with Sheryl Crow, said she came over to try and offend me, and she succeeded. Boy, are you a wimp? Are you a wimp? What a pussy. You've been offended by Sheryl Crow. Please. And I'm telling you, if this doesn't tell you that this guy has something hiding in the closet, you know, any warm-blooded man, I'm sorry, I don't care who you are, would not take offense to being touched on the arm by Sheryl Crow. it was a beautiful moment, you know. Love to be a fly on the wall there. And I bet Lori David was just, you know, loving every second of it, because he's a bit of a character himself. Oh, and the pictures that I've seen, you know, just absolutely outstanding. Now, I gotta tell you, you know, I took my show off yesterday because I had a business meeting in the city this afternoon, and so I kind of needed to get some things accomplished before I went in, and I decided to get a decent night's sleep for once. And so if you go into the city and you head to go take the train out of the city, you know, late in the afternoon at peak hour, as they call it here. It's not rush hour, it's peak hour, which actually I think is a bit more descriptive, because I remember rush hour in New York, and you sure weren't rushing anywhere. But peak traffic hour, yeah, that makes a little more sense. Now, you get handed this little miniature version of the Daily Telegraph, which is a Murdoch newspaper, and it's called the MX, right? And it's, you know, about a 20-page kind of thing, and it's all just pop culture nonsense, and fill, and, you know, a little bit of propaganda mixed in. Now, in this thing, there's Sheryl Crow's right on the front cover, right? And I'm going, wow, Murdoch is actually covering the Karl Rove spat. Well, no. You open it up, and it's about her talking on her blog about using only one sheet of toilet paper per visit. I'm going, oh, that was really the top Sheryl Crow story of the day now, wasn't it? Her dunny blog. How stupid. But, you know, this just shows you, you know, how bad some of the media is. And, I mean, the Daily Telegraph is, it's really only proper use is to wash your windows with, or to wipe your butt with, because it really is a rag, so they end up taking up like nearly half a page on Sheryl Crow and her talk about not wasting toilet paper, which I think was just, you know, a token thing about environment, but, you know, hey, what are you gonna do? It's Murdoch. However, I have something far more important from the front page, which I'm going to hang on till after we take our first breaky poo here. So, in fact, we're going to do that. And if you want to get in on the program, you got a few minutes to do that before we have this possible interview. So you can dial into the program 1-877-443-2366. And I don't have the You Pay It number handy, but I'll get that to you later. So stick around, folks. You're listening to the Cup of Joe Radio Show with John Fox, keeping the seat warm for the working man's thinking man. And you're on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, the problem with the so-called professional media has just as much to do with the news they're not telling you than it does with what they do tell you. If, for example, you were to believe what you see on TV or read in the newspapers, you would think that everything is just fine in New Orleans or along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. That's why unreportednews.net is so important. It's not just keeping us informed of the tragedy that's still unfolding on the Gulf Coast, it's helping to do something about it by helping families who have had their lives and livelihoods destroyed. Not just by a terrible natural disaster, but by the callous indifference of the current administration and their wealthy allies in the news media. UnreportedNews.net is taking the initiative to keep us focused on this tragedy, but they can't do it alone. They need your help. So please go to UnreportedNews.net and give what you can, and let others know what's happening there. Because the only thing worse than an unnecessary death is an unmourned one. UnreportedNews.net, your source for real news.
It must have been prayer meeting with Reverend Brother Bob.
See, hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
You absolutely know that you cannot mention Robert Sunday without conjuring me. This is the known fact.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. Well, sometimes I do it on purpose.
You know, the thing that kills me, you know, God just continues to punk Robert Sunday. After time, after time, and it goes back for years, you know. Let's talk a minute about his business venture. From 91 to 94, he was involved in something called Calo Vita, and it was a multi-level marketing company that reached that pyramid scheme.
Yeah, like Amway.
Sold beauty products and healthcare products. Oh, they had a product called Sea of Galilee Mud Mask.
No, they did not.
Oh, yes, thank you.
You no.
Bob, as a heart attack, I'm serious.
Sea of Galilee Mud Mask?
Oh, yes, it was part of the product line.
Prayer meeting edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid, Wednesday nights, 6 to 9 p.m. here on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water, use it wisely.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show with your with the headbanging hippie who's saving all that turning it up to 11 thing for my hour. But anyway, so I was mentioning that, you know, there's this rag paper crappy version, small version of a crappy Murdoch paper that gets handed out for free at the train stations. And the front page has this headline. And this isn't online or anything, so I have no link to send you. The headline is, "I won't upset U.S. on Iraq. Howard sticking to his war guns." Okay. Get ready for this. The campaign here has officially started, at least in rhetoric form. A major reason Australian troops would not be withdrawn from Iraq was because it would humiliate the U.S., Prime Minister John Howard said today. Howard said the U.S. power and support was important for Australian security, and he would not support a policy that weakened it. It would be a colossal blow to U.S. prestige in the Middle East and around the world if the coalition pulled out of Iraq and it appeared to have lost the war, he said. There is nothing in it for Australia in seeing America humiliated in the Middle East, he told ABC Radio. And that's the effect of calling for Australian withdrawal, because if it's okay for us to go, the smallest contingent of the entire coalition, why isn't it okay for the Americans or the British to go? The British are already leaving, you numbnuts! Howard said history made it clear that U.S. power and support was very important to Australia's security.
I'm simply not going to support a policy that leads the humiliation, the withdrawal, and the weakening of American power and prestige around the world, he said.
Sorry, American prestige was blown out a long time ago. I mean, please. This guy is living in such an opposite world. It's disgusting. That would give great power to the terrorists. Howard also said he would have preferred that Australia was no longer engaged in operations to train Iraqi forces. The death and displaced, this is the bit that kills me. People are head slapping in the chat room. People are head slapping John Howard. Yeah, good on you. This is the bit that absolutely kills me, and this just shows the hubris of this pathetic little man. The deaths and displacements of civilians in Iraq were justified by the removal of former dictator Saddam Hussein, he said. You ass. That's all I can say. You absolutely arrogant fool. Let's talk about that American support and security here for a second. Now, on Sunday night, the ABC had a wonderful documentary called Curtin. I believe it was C-U-R-T-I-N. Now, this is about a Labor prime minister during World War II. And this is a guy I had never heard about. And I've now been coming to find out through the education from good friends like Lori, who's fire ant in the chat room, my great friend Scott Berry, who is a walking Australian history book, especially when it comes to politics. Now, this is the guy who became prime minister about 1941, if I'm not mistaken. And he is considered by both sides of politics as possibly being one of Australia's greatest prime ministers ever. And this documentary portrayed a guy who really weighed up the cost in lives of war. Now, we didn't get taught any of this stuff in American history or in American schools about what happened to Australia in World War II. Now, you know, we hear all about, you know, Hitler, the Nazis, Poland, England, and then we had Pearl Harbor and all that. Now, after 1941, the Australians had, now remember, this is, you know, all fighting for the king or the queen, whatever it was at the time, you know, for the monarchy, had troops in Singapore, and we had troops in the Middle East. Now, the Asian front was being run out of Great Britain, as opposed to being run out of possibly, well, Australia. Now, there was a situation where the threat to Australia from the Japanese was starting to become very, very real. And Curtin was finding that they didn't have the weapons and they didn't have the men here to actually protect Australia at home. And he wanted to cut a long story short, the British basically were forced to surrender in Singapore, basically turning over an entire battalion of Australian troops over to the enemy.
There were two battalions in the Middle East which he demanded to have come home to protect Australia. Well, the British couldn't come up with the boats to do it, so then the Americans came in and said, "Oh, look, we'll ship the boys home." And in the middle of sending them home, the Americans, FDR, decides, no, we really need those two battalions of well-trained Australian troops. We'll send you one battalion of new conscripts from America that don't know the terrain, don't know anything about it. They basically hijacked two battalions of Australian soldiers without their consent. And this guy Curtin fought long and hard, and he had been a journalist at one point, so he actually brought the press into his inner circle and said, look, to prevent leaks that could actually jeopardize, and he actually finally convinced the Americans to get these troops back to Australia. Okay? And they had no air cover. The ships that were bringing these troops back to Australia from the Middle East had no air cover. The Japanese had virtually the entire thing, the entire area, you know, between the Middle East, Southeast Asia, and Australia, pretty well covered. So they couldn't have any leaks because these guys had no protection. So he brings the press in and said, look, I'm going to tell you everything, but you can only let out what I tell you to let out. And the reason being that if they get a whiff of where these ships are, that's two battalions dead. Now, he was not a well man. He suffered from a severe form of gastritis, which was exacerbated by stress, don't you know? And over the weeks of waiting for these troops to actually get home, he didn't sleep for 10 days at a time because he just paced around the grounds of his home because he was so fearful, and it was his decision that possibly could have been the end to Australia as a nation. And he ended up getting them home, and these troops ended up, you know, fighting the Japanese back at Darwin after they had bombed civilians. And here's the wild part. He died 5 weeks before the end of the war. He never got to see the thing through. The stress absolutely killed the man. And from all impressions, this documentary that they did on the weekend really portrayed this guy very, very well. From because my mate Scott said, you know, he says, I'm not actually going to be home. I would love to be watching this. And I got to catch it. And it was intriguing. It was beautifully shot. The ABC, when they want to throw budget at something, they do an absolute, beautiful job. And it was beautifully produced. And I saw, I got a piece of World War II history that I had no concept of. That Churchill basically said, if Singapore fell, all of Southeast Asia, including Australia, was just going to be written off. Now, you know, I have issues about, you know, the fact that, you know, the Anglos that came to Australia ended up destroying the oldest living indigenous culture on the planet and all that, but this was a guy, this Jack or John Curtin, who seemed to be the type of politician you really, really would want. And he came into power when two independents in the House of Representatives in this country, there was a coalition government that the Liberals had, and they held it by two seats. And people got fed up with the way things were going, and the two independents crossed the floor. And instantly, that government was dissolved, and this opposition leader became prime minister. probably in a situation that no one would want to take power in. But this is a guy that showed humanity, you know, if this is at all accurate. And I've been finding out that John Howard has worked very hard to try and make this guy Curtin disappear from Australian history, because it completely debunks that whole idea that Labor would be soft on defense or bad at dealing with a wartime situation, right? So, you know, I was absolutely amazed and not surprised that I had never heard of this guy. Because, just because of who he seemed to be. And you know, I was chatting with Fire Ant the other night in a chat, and he was saying that even one of his really conservative relatives really loved this guy. You know, may possibly have been, you know, is definitely one of the greatest prime ministers that this country has ever had. And just like John Howard would like to rewrite the history of Australia and the Aboriginals, he seems to want to wipe this guy from the history books entirely. So, you know, and here you got John Howard sitting there going, you know, America, America, America. America basically screwed Australia, took their troops, or tried to. But this guy just said, no, this is just completely, you know, it was inexcusable for a foreign leader to take command of your nation's troops. And now you have Johnny Howard having Australian troops basically playing to the American Empire. You know, all to save face for America? Come on, John! Give me a break. And wait until we get to my show. I got Johnny audio that's actually absolutely gonna make your head spin. You know, it almost brought the conniption on to me. You know, that old Bill Cosby thing where he talked about his wife after he gave the kids chocolate cake for breakfast. You know, the head split down, face split down the middle, the white light came out. You know, the whole bit. You know, you know, just showing what a fool he is, and you know, what an ass, and John Howard's coming out with this rhetoric because he knows he can't actually win on the issues. So we're going to go to our bottom of the hour breaks. Don't know if our interviewee is going to ring in yet or not, but we'll see what happens. So stick around, folks. You're listening to John Fox filling in for Joe Vecchio here on the Cup of Joe Show. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network, and we'll be back right after this.
Still. And I'm
Advertising on the Cup of Joe radio show is both easy and inexpensive. Ads that cost as little as $5 a piece are a bargain when you consider that the Cup of Joe show has an audience in the thousands for a live show, and that's not even counting the thousands more that listen on iTunes or at the archives on the White Rose Society. And all you have to do is email me at joe@cupjoe.com, that's CUPJOE.com, to find out how you can advertise your blog, organization, or product. What are you waiting for? Email me now at joe@cupjoe.com, CUPJOE.com, and let internet radio ads work for you.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Striking teachers in Hayward, California have taken their fight to the internet, Jesse Russell reports.
And what is becoming an increasingly common trend with organized labor? Teachers with the Hayward Education Association, who have been on strike for 8 days, have taken their fight to the internet. The group has been posting videos on the video file sharing website YouTube and emailing them out to friends and supporters. One video called The Truth has been viewed nearly 4,600 times. Another video allows a teacher to speak her mind without the filter of the media.
Hayward school teachers are looking for a fair contract. We need one immediately so we can get back in the schoolroom and give our students of Hayward quality education. Not only do we need a fair contract, we also need respect. And Dr. Fahil is not showing us respect. When he disrespects the profession of teaching, he's disrespecting the community and devaluing the students. Dr. Fahil and the Board of Education, please get back to the table and resolve this immediately.
The teachers are seeking a 16% raise over 2 years in current contract negotiations.
The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, and Northwest Airlines are in intense federally mediated negotiations that started on Friday. It's the latest effort to reach an agreement on huge concessions demanded by Northwest as the airline used bankruptcy proceedings to try to destroy union contracts. Washington State's legislature has sent a paid family medical leave bill to the governor's desk there. If the governor signs it into law, Washington would become the second state to provide paid family medical leave. California was the first. The Washington bill provides 6 weeks of paid leave up to $250 per week starting in October of 2009. It must be taken concurrently with leave time provided by the Federal Family Medical Leave Act. According to Harvard and McGill University researchers, the United States is one of just 4 countries that doesn't provide paid medical leave as a national policy. An elected reform slate that includes at least one member of the Longshore Workers Coalition is taking over the International Longshoremen's Association Local 1588 in New Jersey on May 1st. The local is under federal government supervision to keep the mob from reasserting its influence in the local. The supervision will last for at least another 18 months. A federal trusteeship was imposed on ILA Local 1588 4 years ago to end mafia domination. Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
Little has changed concerning the crisis looming for Social Security and Medicare according to the most recent fiscal outlook. Without any changes, Medicare is expected to dry up by 2019 and Social Security by 2041. Those numbers are from a report drafted by the Treasury Department. While Social Security is currently running a surplus, rising health care costs have put so much pressure on Medicare, the program is shedding money from its trust fund.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
I've witnessed those one-night stands. Must have played in a thousand bands. Must have But I'm just here tonight, tomorrow I'll be gone. Seen folks show their blacker sides. Seen them die just for foolish pride. And those drivers always ask to hear that same old song.
Welcome back to the Cup of Joe radio show with your guest host, John Fox, coming to you from Sydney, Australia. And, this is kind of fun. This is a very different kind of a thing for me to do than my usual shtick. But,
this is a little bit on short notice, and I've had kind of a busy day, so I didn't have a whole lot of time to prepare. I did a bit of reading up on our interview guest, who has not rung in yet, but we'll see whether he makes it before the end of the program. So I'm kind of freewheeling it here a little bit today, but that's all good. And I've been doing some thinking. Everybody goes, uh-oh. John's thinking. That's scary. Last week, stayed up late and watched C-SPAN on the web. Thank you, C-SPAN. To watch the grilling of Gonzo. And it was, first of all, very enjoyable. to see him squirm, to see him get caught up in his own line of bull, and it was somewhat reassuring to see members from both sides of politics basically say to this guy, you know, this ain't good enough. You know, you said in your own testimony when you were applying for this gig that you weren't going to politicize the Justice Department, and you have. And if there's one position in American government that should not be politicized, it's the Justice Department. You know, that whole justice is blind thing, you know, and I know that Congress doesn't necessarily have any power to oust him, not in traditional form. However, I reckon there was probably about three times during that testimony, and I saw virtually all of it, where I reckon he perjured himself. And this possibly could open up a doorway to some legal action against him. But more importantly, I get the impression that there was a bit of a fishing expedition, and I don't mean that in a they had nothing to go on. But Senator Kennedy brought up issues, I believe it was Senator Kennedy, about Valerie Plame. I believe, I can't remember which of the other Democrats brought up about the wiretapping. And kind of making these little verbal bullet points on the dirty, illegal, unconstitutional goings-on of this administration. And I'm hoping that this is going to open up the doors to further investigation, because this is the first time, as far as I know, that anyone from this administration has been under oath, aside from a confirmation hearing. So now this has all gone down into public record, and these words can now be turned into investigations that maybe will start to really see some push for impeachment. And you know, Joe said about Kucinich and his pushes for impeachment, you know, how he says he doesn't think that Kucinich's president has the muster to be a president. Now, part of me can agree with him. Part of me thinks Kucinich could probably do a pretty damn good job, because I think Kucinich is actually the type of guy that would put a really great kind of cabinet around himself and be an ideological leader and not an ideologue. Okay, I'm making a huge kind of separation between the two, and I think just because you look in all of the media coverage over all of the candidates, Kucinich gets nothing, and I think that there's a real reason for that. The reason is he is the most clearly anti-war candidate out there. He is clearly the most left candidate out there. And actually, when it comes to holding people accountable for what they have done to the American democracy, he's probably the largest danger to this administration. If he were actually able to be elected. Now, the viability of that, I don't know. I've been hearing some interesting rumblings that people around Al Gore have been getting together in secret to actually maybe look into the concept of him running. And boy, would that shake things up. I reckon we'd see a real spit fight coming from the Hillary Clinton camp, because I'll tell you what, she will not be happy if Al Gore stood up to try and get the nod. And there's part of me that truly believes that Al Gore, even though I really didn't think he'd run, because I do believe he feels he is doing more for the environmental cause as a private citizen, I think he could possibly win and by a landslide. And for the most pressing reason, that most Americans have figured out that he was robbed in 2000. And if you kind of follow the logic of George Bush come 9/11, come the destruction of civil rights, come the police states, come destroying the planet faster, come, you know, the rest of the mess, how much of this would not have happened if Al Gore had been able to rightfully take his place as President of the United States in 2000? And I am told that our guest is on the line. Now, I'm just grabbing my notes here, and I would like to welcome to the Cup of Joe radio show Mr. Sam Ataro, who is involved in the National Truckout, dealing with the truck drivers of the United States of America. Sam, welcome to the program, sir.
Hey, thank you. John, correct?
Yes, sir. I know you didn't realize that there had been kind of a change of plans, but I host the environmental program that follows Joe, and so instead of leaving you hanging and having the folks stuck with a replay, decided that I would fill in for my good friend Joe. And so just real quick, because we don't have a whole lot of time,
sure.
Tell me about, give me the basics on what exactly is going on with this protest, and why are you doing this?
Well, first off, I'm not one of the organizers. I'm actually a new media director for Aaron Russo's group, who made Aaron, of course, made the movie American Food Fascism, and has a national volunteer group out there, 50,000 plus strong, looking to spread the word about that movie and the message that it contains, and educate people on as to the evils and the insidiousness of this economic system and control grid that's being placed across America and across the globe. I'm the new media director for that, and was asked to put out a call to action nationally to our group and to patriots everywhere in support of this truck out idea, which actually comes from the folks at SaveAmericaFund.org. The idea being that truckers everywhere should rally on the 23rd, the 24th, and the 25th, which of course is today, we're in the thick of it, and come into the state capitals if they can't get to Washington, D.C. and hit the Beltway. Basically, just a little bit of civil disobedience and a show of force by showing up en masse and driving slow, which I guess would equate to basically driving the minimum speed limit. I would think that a truck driver doing 55 miles an hour on the highway is considered driving slow. So the idea being while they're doing these slow drive-bys, waving banners and signs to say stop the North American Union, the concept was to bring awareness and media coverage to the issue of the North American Union, which is really being blacked out here in the United States, and we need to raise awareness about it.
Okay, because I went scanning for some articles, and I have to say that this kind of gave me a little bit of the heebies. But what I'm hearing from you is not necessarily this. I was hearing that this had a lot to do about Mexican truck drivers driving in the United States.
Well,
but you haven't mentioned anything.
Well, that's the whole point of the. I mean, that's just the pilot program that's opened up the doors for this whole North American Union, the merger of the United States and Canada and the United States in regards to our security apparatus, our economics, our infrastructure. You know, that's all part of it. The thousands of Mexican trucks that are allowed to come across the border unimpeded by Bush's directive here coming up in the next few months is just the opening salvo. It's that opening of the North American Union door. So that's the first step.
Okay.
So yeah, it's directly related to that. But the bigger picture is the North American.
Okay. Well. I want to stick to this for a second then.
Yeah. Sure. Go ahead.
Then I want you to reassure me because this. I'm sorry, partially sounds to me as just another brown bashing activity.
Why would you say that?
As far as you know, okay, well, and the question that I have, okay, you're having an issue about, you know, truck drivers from Mexico coming and driving routes in the United States.
Well, the issue
now,
happens to be because of Mexico, that's what the door has been opened. Currently, but if it were coming down from Canada and taking American jobs, it would be the same issue. It's not a brown bashing thing. It's nothing to do with where they're coming from. It has to do with the erosion and the eradication of the United States sovereignty and handing over of our critical infrastructure and economic base to a foreign country. It doesn't have anything to do with skin color.
Okay. No. That's fine. All I'm saying is you know, I only got to skim through a few articles before I went on air today. So,
that's the way it's being portrayed quite a bit in the media. That is the issue here.
Okay.
Why we're trying to raise awareness as to what the North American Union is. It's not about skin color. It's not about racism. It's about containing and stopping the hemorrhaging that was going on in this United States by the wholesale sellout of our country to foreign interests, plain and simple.
Okay. No, that's fair enough. Now, as I remember, because I used to live in San Antonio, Texas. Okay, and you know, I was born in New Jersey, and I ended up down in San Antonio for a while, and I happen to remember, you know, and this is going back a few years. You know, when I go and take, you know, a little day trip down to Mexico, there were plenty of American truckers taking loads into Mexico. So is there any, you know, to me, is there a two-way street going on here, or is this a situation where this is something new that is out to undercut American truck drivers? And are there safety or you know, safety concerns? You know, are there different regulations that are looser coming from both Canada and Mexico as far as what the drivers are responsible for? I mean,
that's a good question. It's one of the things that I've been. I'm a media guy. I'm not a truck driver. I don't know the industry very well, so I'm not really qualified to speak on that. But I would encourage people to go and look up the North American Union, look up the Trans-Texas Corridor, look up how they are selling border up to Kansas City. Look up the Kansas City Smart Port. They're setting up a series of inland ports there in the heart of the United States that, from what I understand, and I could be incorrect about this, the truck traffic that we're talking about here is going to proceed pretty much unimpeded from the Mexican border up to those hubs that are being set up from Texas up to Kansas City right now and on up through. So they don't have the same regulations. Foreign truck drivers don't have to operate by the same regulations that the United States truckers do. All of the log speeds, of course, they don't have the same standards by way of security and safety issues with their trucks as we do here in the United States. So basically, what's happening is the American trucker is going to be operating from a competitive standpoint at an extreme deficit with somebody coming up here that's going to be driving substandard equipment, not being put into a position where they have to even speak the language to be able to operate up here, and are going to be willing to work for pennies on the dollar compared to the United States.
Well, and
truck drivers, there's a lot of concern there, but people need to get educated on that themselves. I'm just
okay,
pointing what the main
issues
are. Go ahead.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I do know, and this has been a problem for truck drivers. We have the same problem here in Australia.
Uh-huh.
Truck drivers around the world are constantly being pushed to drive longer hours for less money.
Oh, sure.
Trying to cut their times down, and this sounds like it could be another thing where force the local truck drivers to try and compete with these other guys would then again be kind of reducing the safety of the American drivers because they're having to push themselves even harder. But I tell you what, we got about 2 minutes. If you can, just kind of like wrap up and give as much information as you possibly can in about the next 2 minutes because we're about out of
really
time.
What it boils down to is this is simply a movement by people in the United States that are gravely concerned as to the state of our nation, the erosion of our Bill of Rights. This action is targeted at the trucking industry and the concerns that lie with the move to allow these trucks to come across from Mexico in this way. But it's so much deeper. It encompasses the war in Iraq. It encompasses the war in terror. It encompasses the massive corruption and the criminal activity of the Bush administration, what they're trying to do around the globe, implementing a police state here at home, eroding our Bill of Rights step by step by step, one by one by one, out in plain view. It needs to stop. America has been hijacked, was once the beacon of light and hope to the world, and we have been hijacked by an evil cabal of criminals and who are using the American might and the funding of the American people against the very people in order to bring the United States down to third world status to be able to control every aspect of our society and set up a global police state. And it needs to stop. And this is simply one action in that step. People need to wake up, get educated, get involved, and exercise their rights as free Americans to take back their country. That's what it's about.
Well, on all that, you'll get no arguments from me. And thank you, Sam, for being with us today. We're completely run out of time, mate. And I wish everybody with this the best of luck. And thanks for being on the program.
Can I give a real quick plug? Two websites: SaveAmericaFund.org,
sure.
FreedomToFascism.com, and CitizensAdvocate.net.
Right on, man. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And so. Folks, you can check out all those links. We'll try and get them added up onto the show post for Joe Vecchio's show today. Thanks to Bob for producing. UnreportedNews.net sponsors this program, and thanks to everybody. We're just really on top of it. And I will see you after the news for Foxed Up. Stick around. I won't be long. Thank you.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. It was one of the worst single attacks against U.S. forces in the war. Suicide car bombs in Diyala province north of Baghdad yesterday killed 9 U.S. paratroopers. 20 other soldiers and 1 Iraqi were wounded. The Americans were all from the 82nd Airborne based at Fort Bragg. A group linked to Al-Qaeda has claimed responsibility. In an earlier unrelated incident, a U.S. soldier was killed by a roadside bomb, also north of Baghdad. On Capitol Hill, a House committee holds a hearing today to investigate the death by friendly fire of Army Ranger Pat Tillman. The committee will also probe the 2003 rescue of Private Jessica Lynch. Lynch's videotaped rescue by Special Forces was criticized as having been embroidered for the public. In Washington, the fight between Congress and President Bush over Iraq war funding is coming to a head. Democrats tomorrow will begin voting on the $100 billion war appropriation bill, which includes a timetable for troop withdrawal. The president has vowed to veto it. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon today meets with Syria's president. Ban Ki-moon seeks Syrian approval to use an international court to try the Syrian suspects in the murder of former Lebanese Premier Rafiq al-Hariri. The Secretary General will also discuss weapons smuggling. Hamas today began firing rockets into Israel from the Gaza Strip in retribution for the 9 Palestinians killed over the weekend. The rocket fire breaks a 5-month ceasefire. Yesterday, the top Palestinian security chief quit, saying he was not able to bring law and order to the territories as he had promised. In Somalia, Ethiopian tanks are hammering portions of Mogadishu today. There are also reports of shelling and gun battles near the presidential palace. More than 250 people have been killed in the past week. In Ethiopia, a remote Chinese oil company base was attacked.